So my attention is going to here. We're here together. After spending a week together. And I'm inspired to share what I'm sensing and feeling, that I guess the image of this holding, supporting, feeling, to name, identify, and support. What can support me? What can support us in moving forward from being together here, and then now each of us going into our individual lives? I think there's different dimensions of, I think, what imagine might be. Some of you might be feeling. Some of you might be feeling, relief. I'm ready. I'm ready to go. It's been very full, intense, and I'm ready to balance and live my life and get a little rest and then go back into my life. Others of you might be feeling that, and maybe sadness of creating some bond, some connection and closeness, intimacy within yourself and sharing that with each other. And for me, sadness is not, in this context, is not something that I hold or think of as unwanted, or something that I shouldn't be feeling, or even negative in any sense. But for me, it's a sweet sadness that shows me it's part of the movement of life, part of the rhythms of how life comes and goes. And if I don't resist life, if I don't resist the impermanency, that nothing is permanent, that life always comes and goes, and if I can embrace that, then I can embrace the sweet sadness that comes when something cherished moves on, instead of resisting it. So I want to remember that, because it allows my heart to be full in the flow of holding joy and wonder and intimacy and warmth equally with the pain of leaving and sadness, with no preference of one over the other. When I live in this space, I'm in this kind of peace and grace that something in me says, there's nothing, I fear nothing then. So just to name the possibility of how I can hold sadness when the inevitability of passing away, even little things or big things, this is something I want to continue to surrender to. So just to name this possibility, if there is sadness in you that we're leaving each other, the possibility of greeting it, because it, when I feel sad, it always touches something that is precious, just as in I'm sensing, and Marcus is sharing, the loneliness touches a longing for something that is precious. And then I'm thinking something that must be in some or all of your minds, your attention right now, is I've had this experience here. And my mind says, this is the mind that says, I don't want to lose it. I'm afraid I'm going to lose something. I'm afraid I'm going to lose my connection with myself, my vulnerability. I'm going to lose the quality of connections that I had, because I go back and I know I'm not going to have these same kind of connections and relationships with other people. So my mind gets, the fear gets activated. And already, I want to be aware that if this fear is activated, I have a choice. Can I follow the fear and begin to succumb, submit, give in to that fear, that will almost surely become a self-fulfilling prophecy? So I just want to notice that, if that's what's going on in me. And then I want to realize in my own experience that if I have the expectation that my relationships out there are going to be as intimate as here, that the energy that's generated out there is going to be the same as here, I want to recognize that that expectation is not likely to come true. Because I think that's, in my experience, that's what's created a lot of pain in people. Oh, there's this wonderful warmth and joy and connection and play. Then I go out there and I want the same thing to happen and it didn't happen. You know, this is so painful. And I'm saying that if I were to put on my genie hat, says, it's going to happen. In whatever degree, because the conditions of life in the culture carry a particular quality of ways of being with each other that are different than what we're generating here, what we're creating and growing from them. Now, these are vast generalizations. It doesn't mean that we can't find these oases, an oasis of connection and intimacy and truth, and that we can share this and connect and find this with another person or other people or groups, or that in our life work we can generate, we can create and bring into being this quality. It doesn't mean that we can do that. That's one of the possibilities of this hope. But I'm just addressing that part of the mind that is going to create an expectation and the inevitable fall. If the mind expects something wonderful to happen in the conditions of life, that it might not happen. So this is important for me to say it to a name, in case something like that is going on in your own mind. So then my attention also goes to the notion, the idea of, well then, what is required for me, with me, from me? What is required for me to be able to continue to live my life, to continue to grow that seed that has been planted in me, the seed that I have felt, that I have experienced, that I have contacted in this week? How can I remember this and connect to this and grow it and not lose myself in the midst of how the world pulls us? The inevitable energy of life, the way it's constructed, tends to pull us out of ourselves, out of our authenticity, out of our vulnerability, to go back into these entrenched patterns that are held in the collective within us and lose our soul. Lose our authenticity. What can I do to support this? I think these are really important questions. And I want to address the best that I know of saying some things about what I can do. Maybe there's many other things we can do. I want to identify that first there are internal resources, internal ways of living. And then there are external resources that I can take advantage of. But even the external resources are dependent on my internal resources. That unless I am in touch with my willingness and ability to move through whatever energy that prevents me from asking for help and support, for engaging in the external resource that I know will support me, this life, then I'm not going to act. So here's what's coming to me right now. There is, in me as I sense and feel, there is a power, there is a light, there is a force that's in life that runs in and through me. And my spirituality is my relationship to this force, this life force, whatever you want to call it. It has no name. Call it divine, life, power of life. And it's my relationship to this life force that determines that what I do, because I have a choice, I have agency. It just doesn't happen passively. So then what is the quality that I want to have in my relationship to this life force? First of all, I want to remember that it's not the first priority is not action-oriented, it's not strategy-oriented, it's not, I'm going to do this. The first orientation that is important to me is the attitude, and it's more than attitude because that's more of a mental construct. It's that I want to sink into the longing of my heart and live from here. And this requires devotion. This is a devotional work. I want to remember this is devotional. This access is the heart, that which is in the deepest part of my being. That this is a prayer to life. Mm-hmm. That this is what I'm devoted to. It's not a mental discipline or a mental commitment. That has its place, but I want to remember that there is this power that is greater than the me that I think I am. And I want to over and over again, in the way, the best way that I know how to, surrender to this power. The more I surrender to it, the more I sense that it takes over something in me and magical things happen. When I surrender trying to manage my life, and then I start to see the beauty in other people, start to see the beauty of this power shining through other people's eyes and their joy. And then I can also eventually begin to see the power of this beauty and this light in people's pain, in their struggles, in their loneliness. It's all the same life force. That's all there is one life force. Can I remember this? It's not always easy to remember. It's the forces that take me away from my heart can be very powerful and entrenched. So this takes devotion for me. Devotion is the power. It requires this for me to surrender everything that I know and surrender to the heart of my prayer. My prayer to this source in me, to surrender to it over and over again. To surrender to feeling, because the life force to me is only accessible through feeling. Only when I feel my heart shaking, tenderness. Only when I feel through the body the movement of the sensations of life that move through me. The preciousness of this body. This is the devotion that carries me to practice. Over and over again. And when I forget, rather than berating myself for forgetting in a moment of judgment or harshness to myself or other people, in the moment, the 2 weeks that I've lost track of myself and disconnected, when I find that I've done that, instead of berating myself, I want to remember that the only power that helps to restore me is kindness. Kindness to those inner dynamics in me. Listening, deeply listening to those voices in me that judge me and other people. Bringing softness and kindness to these voices. There's a principle that I want to remember over and over again. Whatever harshness, whatever fear, there's an energy of link. There's an energy that links it to the heart. The energy of longing. This is one of the principles that I remember that keeps me alive. Where I can, and in me, something allows me to transform my distress, my alienation, through the longing, through the tears, dwelling in the discomfort and the pain, finding eventually that it's not my enemy. So these are all elements of a devotional practice. It's not to some god in the sky. It's to that mysterious life force, God divine, that runs in and through every molecule and particle of my being. So devotion is the most important element for me if I want to carry forth and live according to the deepest vision and purpose. This is the inner resource. And then I know that it's not easy, but it does require a choice. I want to look at, ask myself, what are my priorities in life? It's important that I sustain my life. It's important that I have enough food and money to pay for the housing and the medical care, survival and sustaining. That is important, because without that, I don't have the structure to live and sustain my life so that it can be fulfilled. So that it is a priority. Whatever form that gives me the money and the resources to sustain my life. But it's not the goal. It's never the objective. It's only the supportive structure. And then I ask myself, what is my priority? In all of this, this is my priority. My devotion. In whatever form it takes. In every relationship. In every moment. So then, again, resources. What? Out of this, out of the energy, out of the devotion, what does it lead me to? How, if, here's the principle that it's hard to describe. I can believe in it, but when I live into it, it continues to surprise me. When I live into this devotion, there's a fire. Maybe it starts as a spark, but I'm going to feed that fire of feeling, warmth, excitement, inspiration, compassion. And this fire, somehow, I believe, touches those elements in life that draw life to me. It draws situations and conditions and relationships to me. And it's my relationship to this that I want to listen to and to pay attention to and say, what is life bringing me? Can I meet life? Can I meet the opportunity as it gives me? These are my outer resources. Because I realize that I can't do this alone. And not because I'm too weak, and not because I don't have the power, but because I realize that the conditions of life are such that we're all in this together. And that if we are in this process of whatever it is, whatever mysterious process that life is evolving and unfolding into, whatever the notion of fulfillment is here for us, one thing I'm certain of is that we do this together. And I, because of that principle, I can't do it alone. So I want to listen, seek, find those resources there in another, maybe just one other person, two other people, different groups, whatever it happens to be. Support. This is why I've built into this program the support structures where you can stay connected with one another in between the retreats. Because this relationships, to the degree that I'm able to take advantage of these relationships and the external support, I believe is the degree to which I'm going to support the life in me growing and unfolding. And it's not just here. I'm sure everyone here has other supports, other external resources that will support the movement. So the internal resource and the external resources are something that I think is important for each of us to identify. I want to just say a little bit more about a particular structure I think that's been helpful to identify. You don't have to look at it now, but I think we're at the end. I created what I call a matrix for a spiritual life practice. And it's helped me to structure what are the ways that I live, that can be called the ways in which I practice. There's at least three dimensions, maybe four. One is individually. I engage in my internal practice. Okay. And then there's relationship, where it's me and one other person. And then there's collective, groups. The fourth dimension might be an extension of the individual one, which is in how I meet all of life, the world, life, the natural world. Being in nature can be a way of engaging in this practice. Within each of those, individual, relationship, and group, there is a formal and an informal way to practice. I'll give you a couple of examples. An informal way to practice my own individual consciousness is what I call, at every moment, I have committed to being alive through somatic mindfulness, through aliveness, through self-compassion, through awareness. Every moment I want to be alive and connected to my life force, and I'm conscious of it. And the moment I disconnect, I feel it. Or maybe 10 moments after I disconnect, I might feel it. But eventually, I'm going to feel my disconnection. And when I recognize that, I want to restore my connection without judging myself. So it's an individual, internal practice, moment by moment, in every area of my life. So this is an example of what is individual informal. By informal means I do it at every moment. It doesn't have to be a formal structure. And then there's an individual formal way of practicing. I may make an agreement with myself to sit and meditate for a certain period of time, or sit and do yoga or qigong, tai chi, or sit and I'm going to journal an experience. I'm going to focus an internal process, perhaps that I've learned here in this retreat, which I'm hoping that you all will do. The practices are designed for you to apply them in your life. You can apply them in an individual formal practice. Formal meaning I'm setting aside a certain period of time to engage in this practice. So this is individual informal ways of being and formal ways. And relationship practice. An informal way of relationship practice is I want to be consciously mindful and intending that in all my relationships, I want to be authentic. I want to sense and see the other in their authenticity, in their longings, in what's important to them, what matters to them. This is something that is part of my practice. I want to remember that, always. And when I find myself judging another person, I bring this intention. Whether I'm judging somebody as I see somebody looking a certain way at the airport and my judging mind comes in, or anywhere in the store or in this group, or I notice the judging mind come up. It's an opportunity for me to bring my conscious awareness to the life force that wants wholeness and to transform it. So that's in the relationship. And when I'm in communication with someone, then I want to engage in the kind of communication that is authentic and compassionate and empathic with someone. So anytime I'm communicating with someone informally. And then the formal practice might be, I want to set up a time with you, invite support. I'm going through these life experiences. Would you be willing to offer me your empathic and compassionate support? Or the Skype and buddy sessions that you set up here are a formal practice of relationship practice. There's any number of ways that we can set up formal relationship practices. And then in the group, anytime I find myself in a group of people, whatever it is, maybe at work, maybe with friends or family, I want to bring this consciousness and intention informally. I mean, we're not about having a formal meeting to practice something. That's the formal practice. But when I'm with family, for example, and I sense that this family environment is difficult to connect to, whatever the style of communication is I'm alienated from, I want to bring my consciousness to this group. Can I bring my kindness and non-judgmental energy to myself, perhaps to the distress that I'm feeling in this group, and then see the other in their humanity, in their need, recognizing that they're doing what they know how to do given their resources. And an informal practice in any group, a formal practicing group, is that there's an intention behind a group, perhaps like a practice group or a home group practice, or you may lead or facilitate a group that you're supporting people in this kind of consciousness. So I just wanted to quickly identify the different ways in which we can formally, without structure, and formally with structure, bring this way of living as a practice into our lives. I'm curious if anybody has any questions or responses.
Like talking about the external support or resources, somehow for the moment something like click inside me, and I really enjoy, because sometimes I am just thinking that I'm dependent on my external resources. This is this tension. So there I was like, I can just ask, like really feeling it, asking for the support. Yeah. To connect to the life,
yeah.
and that just helped me.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Also, when thinking that I have the possibility to re-listen to what you said, I'm also like with a bit of joy that I can attend again. Yeah. So much that I don't want to write, so I'm really pleased.
Yes. Just hearing you say something about listening triggers the association that I have with, to me, some of the most inspiring things for me are perhaps listening to someone that I respect that has something to share, or music, something that goes beyond the mind and the intellect and the cognition to listen to music, or walking in nature, or anything that brings richness to us, to open our heart to it. So I think music is very, very powerful for many people. Dancing, all of these are forms of practice to me, forms of engaging in the flow of life. Any other question or response?
Since the question is, what you share with us give me a consciousness about the fact that each time I will be able to stay connected with my own vulnerability, or just welcoming something in the other, and I thanks to that, I enable this person to get in touch with his own vulnerability, actually. I enhance, I create more and more the world as possible.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Just wondering, I'm taking a lot of decisions in my life out of intuition, what I would call intuition. And I, I guess it's that feeling state, it's not so much my head deciding, that brought me here. Because Connie talked about you during my mediation course, and I knew I wanted to go there, so something like that.
Yeah. Years ago I was part of a kind of a spiritual teaching, and they used the word intuition. And the meaning of intuition is inner teaching. So tuition meaning teaching. So intuition is inner teaching. So that's how I've always experienced it, is listening to an inner voice. There's a teaching when I can trust and listen to that. So I'm reflecting on, I think I said a lot. Maybe I'm guessing that you're sort of sitting with it, being with it, taking it in. Okay.
I'm curious to explore something, and maybe you have an experience to that you could share. And it's a lot in my life is full of unspiritual informal practices, okay? And in each of these situations I have the choice to fill it with spirituality or with the flow of life, to give it a completely different meaning that is below the surface, that is below reaching something that is beyond the form.
Yes.
And at the same time it's sucking me in. Like it's taking this conscious choice throughout my normal life, is not always easy, actually.
Yeah.
In most cases it's pretty tough.
Yeah.
If I'm faced with the expectations, either you do this or you don't, or you're out.
Yes.
Maybe an outer expectation or something that I'm just making up. But I am confronted with that.
Yeah.
And I do not always have this spaciousness or this presence to make a conscious choice in that moment.
Yes.
And so the conditions, the life conditions that I'm creating, create a life process for me. And if I don't manage often enough to stay present and to go back in this unconscious, to this state of only reacting,
right,
not consciously, then it's hard for me to really maintain that presence. So I wonder whether you have any experiences in really redesigning the life. I'm in the process of, am I going to continue the work I'm doing in the way that I'm doing, or will I just get out of a certain situation and do something different? Because this it's a huge part of my life. I mean, I'm spending 40, 50, 60 hours a week in that job. So I find it really, it's challenging. It's really challenging. So what's your experience in really redesigning the life circumstances?
Well, certainly my experience is different than, my conditions are different than yours, and I think there's some similarity in that what you said. I like the first thing that you said. I think it's really important that there are these, what you call the unspiritual life, and that it's up to you to spiritualize them, to meet them in a way where you experience within yourself, whatever those qualities are, acceptance, compassion, all of those. And then I heard you say, well, this is challenging, because certain life conditions, you're working 50, 60 hours a week, or other conditions or relationships make it such that you get sucked into it. In other words, you probably lose your connection with your fullness and authenticity.
Yes.
So then the question is, how do you restructure it? For me, that's not the most important question.
Mm-hmm.
The answer to how I restructure it, remember the process on choosing life? That's the principle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to premature
yeah.
and go to restructuring
yeah.
it. I want to touch into the energy that I'm longing for.
Yeah.
This is the devotion I talked about. It's not, devotion is not an impractical thing. It's the energy of creativity that when I tune enough into the power of this, I may be going through some very difficult and uncomfortable feelings of anything that this energy takes me to.
Mm-hmm.
The transition to letting go of certain structures and inviting, experimenting, exploring other things that this life takes me to. That's where I would start.
Mm.
It's unknown
yeah.
how I'm going to structure. If I start thinking I'm going to structure it
mm.
without first,
yeah.
I think you're getting what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is where I would put my attention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like not making a new plan.
Yes.
Now.
Yeah.
A new plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not confident that the new plan would be any better than
yeah.
the old plan. Maybe in some ways. But it's
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But notice that what you're wanting is really
mm-hmm. yeah.
the actualization of something that is already in you.
Mm-hmm.
To actualize that, it requires feeding the fire.
Yeah.
And feeding the fire isn't always just an inside job. I feed it and I share it. I share the dream with people.
Mm.
That's
yeah.
life. And then once I do that, something happens in the field of life that there's kind of a networking phenomenon
yeah.
happens.
Yeah.
It's an energetic. So I want to mobilize that energy and then communicate it, connect, share.
Yeah. yeah. It's like taking the decision in the moment when the decision is due.
Yeah.
Consciously.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and then see what happens, what evolves out of that.
Yeah. And I want it to be as
yeah.
passionate
so
as possible. yeah. Yeah.
That is challenging.
Yeah. No, it's interesting that when I reflect on how my own work has evolved in this life, I've just from the year 2000 to about 2003 or 4, I was very active in working at IITs and my own community and there was a group of us four trainers that were doing one or two intensive workshops a year or so. And I was exposed to many people. And after sharing what is dear to me, I had no plan at all about what would evolve. People started coming to me and saying, I want to study with you. Then I thought, oh yeah, someday. You know, my mind said, someday. Not ready for it yet. Someday I had this dream, I'll create something. And then more and more people started coming to me. I said, hey, something's going on here. Yeah. And then I was having lunch with just a couple of people when I was in New York City doing a workshop. And then a couple more people said, I want to study with you. And then something happened in me, call it intuition, impulse, I followed. I said, I'm getting within me my inner dream, and then other people. And then I decided right then, that was in 2005, the summer. I said, I'm going to create a program, and I called it the NBC Life Program. I'm just to contact people, just tell them what the idea is and see if they're interested. I'll keep it small, 16. That's what my idea is. I got so many people interested that I expanded it to 20. And there were people on the waiting list. But I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't have any idea what it was. But that it came from what I'm already doing. the extension of that, the extension of
yeah.
the dream that I have for living this and inviting people to participate. And it's not that I want to share my dream, it's that I want to work with people that helps to awaken their dream for their life.
Mm.
It's not my dream, it's yours.
Mm.
This is your life. This is not my work, this is your work. Your life.
Mm.
That's my dream is to do whatever I can that can help support, awaken your dream, your life force. That's the only thing that works, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's true for everybody. I've often thought people who are interested in NVC and becoming NVC trainers, one of the things I want to really be clear, communicate to people that they think about this principle is that there's two things I think are important, two dimensions in being this label NVC trainer. And both, I think, are absolutely necessary. If we're going to share this thing we call NVC, that there are certain core truths or principles in this that for me, I want them to be unwavering.
What is that?
Unwavering, unchanging,
okay.
Clear, steady, like a beam of light.
Mm.
Whatever these principles are as you identify them. And some of them have to do with living my authenticity, connecting with your authenticity. My needs and your needs equally matter. Just say that's the basic, and there's others. There is an integrity in living this process. And the other dimension that I think is just as absolutely necessary is that when I am living this with others in a group of people, that it is not NVC that I'm sharing. It is me that I'm sharing. It's an I live presence. I live empathy. And it is the individual, creative way that I create it that is important. Unless it carries my individual note, then I'm not being true to myself. I'm trying to live into some template that I've heard. This trainer, I like the way they do it, I'll do it that way. And we can do that temporarily, but I find that unless I find my authentic note, trust in that, and share that in the way that I want to structure my workshops, then something is missing. The power and the passion of what's really possible. So both of these, I think, are really important. The beauty and the integrity of whatever nonviolent communication is, I want to be true to that. As in addition to my own individuality. I don't even know how I got to that point, but it's all connected.
Thank
to
you.
That.
Yeah, especially the last part that you shared, unless it carries my own individual needs.
Yeah.
I'm leaving into the template of something else, of somebody
yeah.
else.
Yes.
Yes. That.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was another story. I want to hog all the time, the attention here.
You have 3 other weeks.
Yeah. When I met my partner, my current partner, in 1993, and I had been involved with NVC, nonviolent communication, for maybe 7 or 8 years at that point, and was doing it, sharing it, and doing work. And yet there was something in me that was uneasy. Something in me that was like, this isn't what I call my work. This isn't what I was talking about. My tone, my flavor, my heart. And I kept saying it. And she said, well, you're doing NVC. She said, no, that's Marshall's.
Mm-hmm.
That's Marshall's work. It's not mine. And that was an interesting point where I just discovered that. And then. It took years, actually, for me to actually find what I call my. And by my, I mean it's that individual, deep inspiration that bubbles up from inside of me that has a particular container that I then share, here it is. And then the very first IIT I was a trainer at in 2000, I shared the first little session on NVC as a spiritual practice. And that was the seed, and from there it just grew. But there's something I want to share about that. I think in each of us, we have a particular deep inner calling that is only yours and yours alone. It's not an external template. And then we choose something externally, a structure, a form, that aligns with this. But it's not the external structure. It is your soul. It is each of our souls. Each of us finds this and lives this, and then we are truly gifts to the world and to life.
For the NVC trainer, I share, I do it with authenticity. As soon as I share my true presence, yeah, and it's by knowing that it is in each moment that I discover my true presence. So,
I believe that that's what has the power to reach people, your presence. So when you teach NVC, it's not on the level of information that has the power. You're actually transmitting yourself, your energy, your presence, your empathy. People see this and something that for me, when I first saw Marshall, it's like, something's happening here. Something has awakened in me, something deep. I cry just for no reason. Something was transmitted. So in that sense, it isn't a teaching so much as it is a transmission. And then we structure this transmission in a way that the other person can receive. So there's a little bit of a teaching structure.
Something I find helpful is to remind myself several times during the day to go back into consciousness. It's helpful for me to find a trigger, like something like every time I look on the clock or every time I hear a phone ring or every something, and then just sort of go, you know, come into the present moment, you know, and connect. That is really helpful, and then it can actually last longer and longer the more.
Beautiful. I love that. I find what ways that help me link anchors, the little pointers, a mindfulness bell. Those are very helpful. Okay.